Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all. This is Christine Willett. Thank you for attending the new GTLD applicant webinar for January. We are here today to discuss the monthly status update for the new GTLD program. We still have some participants joining Adobe as we ramp up. To all of you on the phone, I want to thank you. We will most definitely be taking questions by phone today, so I encourage that participation. I see in the chat folks were looking for the slides. I think we can publish the slides after the presentation. I apologize, those were not published previously. So we will add that to our modus operandi and our plan to do prior to meetings going forward. So shall we commence? We're going to talk about a few topics today. Before I get to my agenda, I will mention that this session is being recorded. We have playback will be available on the microsite at the end of the webinar. We will be holding a question and answer session at the end of the presentation. I would like to encourage everyone who has questions to submit those questions and get in the queue by phone. So we will be taking questions by phone. Questions through the question and answer pod in Adobe Connect will only be addressed as time permits. The reason being for everyone, as you know, I only know a few of you. I'm new still. Now I've been here just over 3 months, and I'd really like to take a personal approach to the question and answer period. And I find that the Adobe chat questions are a bit impersonal. So I'd like to be able to have more of a dialogue by phone. So that's why we're encouraging everyone to dial in by phone. The dial-ins are there on the slides. We can move on to the agenda. We'll be covering a few topics today. First, an update on initial evaluation status and progress. We'll be talking about clarifying questions, the overall initial evaluation timeline, change requests. I've got a metrics dashboard, some information on our customer service center, as well as status on some other projects. And then what I'd like to do is wrap up by talking about modus operandi for this call and this monthly status update. So that is, I see Jeff Newman, yes, contention sets are going to be discussed. Initial evaluation update slide. I see that we've had a, is this just me, Microsoft versus Mac format on my slide is looking a little skewed here. Some things aren't presenting just as intended. But let's go forward with the update. So background screening. What you'll notice, first of all, this is a slightly different format than has been presented in a couple of months. We're really trying to standardize the statuses and provide consistency of status reporting across all panels and add more clarity for all of us who are part of this program and intimately familiar with various stages, but also so that it's understandable to those who are not as intimately familiar. So we're going to be talking about applications which are not started in evaluation by certain panels, those applications that are in evaluation in some state of evaluation, applications that are in the clarifying question stage, meaning that they have clarifying questions generated and or issued, and then or we're evaluating the results of those clarifying questions, and then finally preliminary panel results. And then we'll be talking about key dates for each of the panels. So, background screening. Previously, we had mentioned that we had preliminary results on background screening, and you'll see here that I'm mentioning that they are all in evaluation. So I want to provide some clarity there. background screening work, we've effectively split into two phases of work. The first step is validating application data. It's a corroboration step. That first phase of background screening work is 100% complete. We have moved on to phase two of work, which is more the true background screening, analysis, a review of publicly available information, and reporting. As a result of phase one, we will be coming back to applicants with questions. There are maybe up to 100 applications where we've determined that there's some additional information we'll be looking for. Either stakeholders have changed, officers, directors, et cetera, have changed based on our review and analysis versus what was input on the application, or we find that data is missing or conflicts with what we found. So for those reasons, you may be receiving a request for information in the next few weeks or months to ask for additional data, and that will be our approach as we complete background screening. I hesitate to call it a clarifying question. We won't be doing this in one round, but you will be contacted by the Customer Service Center via email requesting information as needed. So background screening is on target. As I mentioned before in previous meetings, there is no intention of publishing background screening results prior to or separately from initial evaluation results. So background screening is on target. We expect that all background screening will be done in sequence and to meet the dates of the rest of the evaluation work. Going on to string similarity. String similarity, you see we have 1,917 strings in evaluation. And I realize, I want to acknowledge that there's a lot of interest in the publication of string similarity results in contention sets. I realize that this is a critical path item for many of you. Many of the applicants need this information so you can move forward in your business models and make business decisions. So we don't take this lightly. You see a key date of March 1st, and that is the new working date of publication of contention sets and string similarity results. So I realize that for many of you this will be disappointing, and we had previous plans to publish results prior to March 1. When we last met at the end of November and in December, we were still working toward the January publication date. I want to acknowledge and let you all know we are striving to ensure the consistency and clarity of the process we're following, that the panel is using for string similarity evaluation. And ICANN as a whole, we are focused on the consistency and clarity of process. So once that is completed and we have confidence and we understand the process, then we will be able to review the results from our panel, and we will be publishing those results as soon as possible. Moving on to the other panel, DNS stability. That panel is nearly completed with its work, 1,906 results completed. There are no CQs being issued for DNS stability. Geographic names, again, the vast majority of applications are through the geographic name evaluation. There are a number of applications that have received clarifying questions. There may be a few more. Many applicants have responded to their clarifying questions around geographic names. And the timeline for the geographic names clarifying questions is different than clarifying questions for the FinTech and Registry panels. Moving on to financial, technical, and operations and registry service panels. As you see, we have some applications which have not started evaluation, and I want to address that. So our panel firms have a certain amount of bandwidth and capacity that they are able to use in evaluation, and the focus prior to December 17th was they were evaluating all applications in the random order in which applications were assigned. However, starting after we prioritized applications in December, by the end of, before the holidays, so I believe that was by December 20th, 21st, the panel firms had received all of the applications for the first that are in the first 400, and they were had begun evaluation of the first 400 applications. That is putting us on target and on track for FinTech and Registry Services to ensure that all applications are now being worked based on priority number and in sequence, so that we can meet all of the downline target dates. The only other comment I'd make on this slide, there are applicant advisories that are posted on the applicant's corner of the microsite, advisories for questions 25, 30B, 48, and 50 are posted. If we come across and find a need for additional advisories, those will be posted as well. But to clarify, all panels, all evaluation, we are on target to meet the March 23 date of releasing initial evaluation results for at least the first 30 applications, as were committed in Toronto. Okay, moving on to the next slide. Specifically clarifying questions. As some of you know, we mentioned in the last webinar, we began issuing clarifying questions for the geographic name applications in November. We will begin issuing clarifying questions for the registry, financial, and technical and operational panels starting next week. You may receive those as early as the 15th. I want to make sure that everyone is aware that up to 80% of all applications may receive a clarifying question. So don't be surprised. Don't feel penalized. There are plenty of clarifying questions to go around. And then the pace at which we're working to release clarifying questions for 100 applications per week. And we're going to be doing that based on priority number. So that said, if you are application 99 and you don't receive your clarifying question in the first week, don't worry. There are a few adjustments. So, but give or take, 100 is our target for releasing clarifying questions week over week. And the reason we expect to be able to continue at that pace is because our panel firms have already made so much progress. Prior to our prioritization draw, significant progress was made by all panels. It just wasn't all in priority order. Now that we know priority, that is the way all initial evaluation work is progressing. And then, as you know, you all have, applicants now have 4 weeks to respond to clarifying questions. We increased that from the previous expectation of 2 weeks. Moving on. So, to talk about timeline and of initial evaluation. You'll see the blue bar depicts that we'll be issuing clarifying questions to applicants at a pace of about 100 per week, starting mid-January. 1,900 applications, about 19 weeks. That goes through mid-May. Applicants then have 4 weeks to respond to those CQs, So that will response period will be from mid-February to mid-June. Starting as soon as those responses are received, we will be working to evaluate those responses, and we'll be completing the evaluation and reviewing the results internally, starting at a pace of 30 per week and ramping up to a pace of 100 per week. And that gets us to meet the March 23rd milestone date to start publishing IE results, again, starting at a pace and moving up, ramping up from 30 per week to 100 per week. So the bullet points, we'll be releasing them in priority order. We'll ramp to 100. And the bullet point at the bottom that's difficult to read says that all initial evaluation results are scheduled to be published by the end of August. And if there is a possibility of expediting those results, we certainly will. That is not a limit we have, but that is a reflection of the current capacity that all the panel, the ICANN team, et cetera, that we all have towards this timeline. The reason that we expect to be able to ramp from 30 per week up to 100 per week is because the work of the team will be shifting from issuing clarifying questions to evaluating the final results after clarifying questions. So that will be one of the reasons where we will be able to scale. The next topic, and this slide is missing a couple of charts. I'm going to ask my technical team, can somebody take a look at the slides that I sent and see if we can do something to get them published? I'll speak to the customer service center. I had some metrics and graphs that have fallen off this slide. So to date, 13 applications have withdrawn. So from the original 1,930 applications, we have 1,917 active applications. Zero objections have been filed. Change requests, 424 change requests have been submitted in total. We have approved, processed, and posted 54 of those change requests. And then to address some of the customer service center calls, as with any customer service call center, we use a ticketing system, the CRM system, to log and track our cases. So month to date, and this is as of yesterday, we had created 58 cases month to date. We resolved 686 cases, and we have, as of yesterday, 386 cases open. The reason we had 686 cases resolved this month, not an inflated number. It's simply a reflection that we had a lot of cases opened in November and December around the prioritization draw, and those cases are now able to be closed. The graphs that you don't see on this slide, I apologize. We'll just make sure that that's published. When we do publish the slides via the microsite, we'll make sure that the charts are reflecting accurately. They're depicting the month-over-month volume of cases as well as the case breakdown by the type of case we're receiving. So we are actively working on metrics dashboards to drive continuous improvement within the customer service center. You get what you measure. So as we start to focus on the time to resolution, the number of cases open, and the types of cases, I anticipate that the overall customer satisfaction and service delivery of the customer service center will improve. I want to address change requests. I noted here the statistic that we've received 424 change requests total and only posted 54. We have a very rigorous process for handling change requests. It is not a fast process. And what this is a process that was established many, many months ago, early days of the program, during the time that the application window was open, in fact. Now that we are well into initial evaluation, we realize that the impact of change requests can be significant. We have applications that will be that are nearly completed in evaluation, and we have open change requests. So we're doing two things. First, we are looking at the process we have to see if we can establish some revised policies and revise our process so that we can handle the change requests on a more expedited basis. And secondly, we are working to determine what we will be doing about the impact of change requests since the evaluation of many applications will soon be complete. I think we're going to pause now. I think we're going to try to address the PowerPoint presentation. So if you can bear with us while we get the presentation updated. Okay, so I think that the slide is updated. So those are the graphics that depict the month-over-month cases. This is typical customer service metrics that, as all of you applicants, you are my customers, we want to be able to give you some meaningful metrics and statistics on how we're handling cases going forward. This dashboard will evolve in coming months as we enhance what we're tracking, we build aging reporting, and we create trend reporting. Let's move on to the next slide. So other projects. These may not all be top of mind for you, but they are all projects, critical projects within the new GTLD program. The Trademark Clearinghouse project is on target. We have a variety of milestones coming up in January, February, and April, publishing agreements, finalizing SOWs for the Sunrise and claims processing. I think some of you are involved in that work and have been working with the Trademark Clearinghouse team. We'll be launching the Trademark Clearinghouse in February and the database in April. The URS, Uniform Wrap and Suspension Project, also on target. We have identified a service provider, and we'll be formalizing that relationship by February. As soon as that relationship is formalized, we'll be announcing the selected service provider. However, we will also continue to engage with additional providers to develop their readiness. So we will not limit ourselves to a single URS provider. We may likely have many in different regions around the world. And then finally, we had an ongoing effort. We issued an RFP. We've selected a service provider who is building a testing system to perform the pre-delegation testing. So we're engaged with them. We're actively working with them to finalize an implementation project plan. That will be done this month. and then by April we'll be ready to conduct pre-delegation testing. Finally, I wanted to talk about the modus operandi for this meeting. I've heard from many of you that how we've been operating is not working for you. The webinars are scheduled without enough prior notice. They're held at poor times for applicants outside of North America, and then you're not always pleased with some of the content. So going forward, I want to let you know how we will be operating. We will be scheduling webinars at least 2 weeks in advance, if not more. Our intention is to hold webinars on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, or Thursdays in order to avoid holiday or weekend travel. We will also be identifying three times, rotating between three different UTC times based on the presenter location. So as long as I'm here in the U.S., on the West Coast presenting, it will likely rotate somewhere between 7 a.m. and 8 or 9 p.m. Pacific time. So we'll pick times that are hopefully better for those of you around the world. When we do have presentations or we are meeting and the presenters, we have, for instance, we have an objections webinar coming up, and we are going to have presenters who are primarily based in Europe, so we may pick a different time that is more optimal for those presenters. So that will be driving the time of the webinars. And I hope that you see today, by these slides, that we have a focus on clear, consistent content, and we want to have trusted communications. We've certainly redefined some of our status and presentation information here today. But this, as I've taken over the program and begun reporting, I needed to make sure that this is reporting that I can stand behind, that is explainable, and that is in line with the process and procedures that the operations team is following. So that is the modus operandi moving forward. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be shifting to taking questions by phone. And following that, if we have time, we will see if there are any questions that we take from the Q&A section. So we have 67 people on the phone, and we don't have any questions. So I'm going to encourage all of you to get online. I'd love the opportunity to dialogue with anyone on the phone. There's lots of chatting going on. So Michelle, do we have any questions, any hands raised to ask a question? No? Okay. I see we have a couple of hands raised in Adobe. How can we... I'd like to acknowledge these individuals who are putting their hands up. I'd very much prefer to dialogue with someone here. We'll pause here for a moment until some folks can get dialed in and ask their questions via the bridge.
And this is the operator. We do have a question coming from Don Vett. Please go ahead, sir. Christine, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
It's John Nevitt.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm a little disappointed, and by you know the look at the chat room, I think people are applicants are disappointed as well. Let me start with contention sets. We were told in September, and during the ICANN meeting in Toronto in October, that they would be released in October. Then we were told November, and then the November webinar we were told December. December webinar we were told January. So now in the January webinar, we're skipping a month, and we're being told March. So and I know that we want to have trusted communications, and we want to understand where everyone's coming from, but what specifically is the cause of the delay, and should we trust that March deadline?
So the cause of the delay, understood, I think I've got. So you're asking what is the cause of the delay. You're expressing the frustration and disappointment, as I would expect. And is the March deadline a good one? So what I can tell you is I totally appreciate your frustration, one. Two, you're right, the communication around this, we have been communicating deadlines that we are working towards. Every date is, every time we publish it, it is the date we have been working towards. However, we previous to my engagement, the connection between bottoms-up planning and top-down planning, I felt that there was a disconnect between. So to set a stretch goal is and set a milestone is terrific, but if operationally you can't meet it, all it does is engender frustration. So once I got on board and I realized that we did have some delays with the specifically with the contention set and the strength similarity panel, we started to adjust dates. And adjusting and continuing to flip dates a month at a time is indeed frustrating. I will tell you that I am quite confident we will have results on strength similarity by March 1st. We need to publish the contention sets. We need to publish the strength similarity results no later than March 1st in order to keep and maintain the timeline for the rest of the program. That is thoroughly understood. As I said when I was presenting the status, could the presenter move back to the initial evaluation status slide? As I mentioned when we were discussing the status and the dates here, we are working to ensure that each panel is following a consistent and clear process so that the results they are reporting, they can stand behind, and ICANN can stand behind. At this date, I don't have such results. We are working with the panel on their process, to document that process, so that when we do have results, they will be clear and understood. John, do you have, I don't know if we can allow John back to speak, but John, do you have any follow-up to that?
So I guess the point is, what I'm hearing, that ICANN's vendor is not responding on a timely basis, and that's why there's a cause of the delay. It's not coming from ICANN itself.
I don't want to give you that.
I didn't really hear the cause of the delay. Why? I understand and appreciate your understanding and why you know you want to set a deadline that you think you can meet, especially after missing the last four deadlines. But the key question is, you know, why is there a delay? What could we do together as a community to prevent the delay? Because March 1st is really unacceptable to most of us. And you know, why would it take ICANN literally all applications were in I think it was March of 2012. Why does ICANN need almost a full year to decide what goes in which contention set? That's what applicants are concerned about.
So, as you know better than I do, I wasn't here then. The application window ended and closed in May. We went through administrative checks for 1 month. So it wasn't until the end of June, I believe.
We all had to pay in March. We were all in lock and loaded in March. Yes, after the glitch, it got delayed, but the apps were in there.
The application window didn't close until the end of May. So
yes.
Application processing did not proceed until after the administrative work.
Okay, I'm sorry. I can see the point. Why would it take 11 months or 10 months for ICANN to figure out what's in which contention set? And what is this an extra 60-day period going to do? Like, what's going to happen in the next 45, 60 days that didn't happen already? And what can we do to accelerate that?
So what I can tell you is that when you don't have a consistent process or there are questions about a process that's followed, it invariably would put into question the results that would be come out of that process. So someone just told me yesterday, we never have time to do it right the first time, but we always have time to do it again. So I don't want to publish a contention set and string similarity results that I can't stand behind, that I cannot explain, and that only frustrate and potentially affect the forward progress of the program.
Okay.
What
is there a small set that are problems such that you could publish the 1,800 of them now, so that we at least have some clarity of where we are?
So string similarity really doesn't work that way. We are, we've all read the guidebook. This idea of confusingly similar. So the method of application and the process of evaluating for confusing similarity is what we are working on. So if I change the process by which I determine something to be confusingly similar, it could affect every single one of these strings. So I can't publish some and not others. So I hear you, I understand, I see the chat, I understand the March 1 date is very disappointing, very frustrating. If there is any ability for us to publish results prior to that, we absolutely will. This is not something we are dragging our heels on. It is getting attention at the highest level. John, thanks for your question. Anything
you.
Other than string similarity? Any other questions? Do we have other people in the queue? We have two more folks.
Our next question comes from Yasmin Omer. Please go ahead.
Hi, Christine. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Question regarding, is somewhat related to the contention set publication. Have ICANN considered the unfairness in releasing the initial evaluation results of those in a contention set at different times? And this is owing to the fact that those with an earlier draw number don't have the advantage granted to those with a later draw number of knowing whether contending applications have passed initial evaluation before making the decision to withdraw their application and receive a 70% refund. Thanks.
So I'm sorry. I don't know that I understood the question. Could you attempt to restate?
Sure. So if I'm in a contention set with a number of other applications and I have an earlier draw number, the 70% refund is based on withdrawal before you get your initial evaluation results, correct?
That's correct.
Yes, so if I have a later draw number and I'm in a contention set, I'm able to see whether all other applications in my contention set have passed before I make that final decision to withdraw my application and get a 70% refund. Whereas if I have an earlier draw number, I can't make that decision and get a 70% refund without seeing who's passed and who's failed in my contention set. Is that something that you guys have considered or not?
So, as I understand what you're, if I understand what you're saying, that applicants are eligible for 70% refund until their initial evaluation results are published. That is accurate. So, if you are in contention, if you are number 200, and you are in contention with an application at number 1800, you would have to withdraw prior to receiving your initial evaluation results without knowing the initial evaluation results of number 1800. That is accurate. To consider adjusting that, we have not had discussions about adjusting that refund schedule. What the guidebook outlines is discusses that initial evaluation, and since we are not waiting for all initial evaluation to be complete, but releasing them earlier, and there's a benefit by having a higher or a lower priority number and having the results sooner, the effect is that that would also be the time in which the refund eligibility would reduce. That's accurate. Does that answer your question?
So is there any scope for ICANN to reconsider their refund schedule based on that unfairness?
I don't know. You could certainly put public comment out there about the program to that effect if it's something that...
Well,
if there's further discussion, we could certainly... do some analysis on the impact.
A similar question was raised in the NTAC comments to the prioritization rule. However, given that we haven't seen the summary of comments, we don't exactly know if that's been considered or not, so that's why I'm raising it here.
I apologize. If the summary of comments from the prioritization draw public comment period have not been published, that is, I take full responsibility for that. So that analysis is complete. I'll make sure that that is published immediately. Looked at that analysis, there was not a lot of discourse on the refund period as part of the prioritization.
Okay, so the response for now is that the refund schedule is what it is at the moment and you will not be changing it, is that correct?
That's correct. It stays as is, that the refund eligibility at the 70% level, you're eligible for that up until your initial evaluation results are published. That's correct.
And there's no scope for that to be changed at the moment?
That's correct. Something we could certainly take under advisement. We have five other folks in the queue. Who would be next?
And our next question comes from Charles Gomez. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you, Christine. The objection period, I believe, is scheduled to close on March 13th, and the guideback says that ICANN staff has 30 days from then to publish the full list of objections, which would put it at April 13th, right at the end of the, just a couple days after the end of the Beijing meeting, and then the applicants have 30 days to respond. Do you have any better sense as to when you will publish the objections so that we can plan resources and sync it with the Beijing meeting going on? And if you can't be too specific, I mean, do you anticipate it being before Beijing, after Beijing, or during Beijing? All of those are significant to us as applicants who are preparing.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I don't have a specific sense of the timing of that around Beijing. I would assume publication of that prior to Beijing would be preferable. Is that correct?
I don't know, and I won't even try to speak for my own company in that regard, because many of us are super busy during the week at Beijing, and if that four-week window is ticking off, I can see problems with that. So I'm not sure what the answer is there, and maybe we can talk offline further on that, but and others may feel differently than that. I just know that many of us are super busy during the week at Beijing, just like ICANN staff is. And so certainly knowing when it's going to happen as soon as possible, if that can be done, would help us to plan our resources accordingly, whichever way it happens.
Completely makes sense to me. Let me take that offline, and we will revisit that timing.
Thank you.
Sort of like CQ problem. You want to get the clarifying questions out as early as possible, but you don't want the window to start ticking right over the holidays or the ICANN meeting. So let me take that, and we'll follow up on that. Thank you for that.
And our next question comes from Jeffrey Eckhoff. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks. So I'm going to shift gears a second and about another deadline or target date that is in the slides, which I can't adjust slides, but it had to do with the Trademark Clearinghouse. And you said, I believe, that it was on target, those dates, and that there were plans for the statement of work to be released and finalized, I believe it said, in January. What I didn't see, and I'm not sure if that is part of the statement of work, is the specifications to be given out to registries and registrars, because we are still all waiting for this, for the implementation, and I'm not sure if that statement of work was for the Trademark Clearinghouse for them to be ready, or it was, or for the registries and registrars, because we still don't have a target date for that to be released, and hoping that you could finalize that and maybe make a statement on that today.
So what I was referring to was the statement of work ICANN has with the two vendors, Deloitte and IBM, and publishing those agreements. The Sunrise and Claims statement of work are both reflecting here in January. That has been the goal that the team's been working towards. So in terms of on-target, the on-target for launch of the Trademark Clearinghouse, there's much work to be done on the Sunrise and Claims effort. So I apologize for any confusion there.
Right. So is there a target date for the information to be released? Because once that's still not defined, and then all of the people who interact with the clearinghouse, namely the registries and registrars, have not even begun to build this yet, or maybe they've done some preliminary work, but we don't have a functional specification or any details yet. So I know if that wasn't included here, would you be able to put out, you know, at least to set forth a target date or a deadline for that information to be released? Because that is a critical, as you can imagine, a critical component of, for the, I would call, the launch of the Trademark Clearinghouse.
Sure. Yes, let me take that. After the meeting, I'll follow up on what those other target dates are. I know there are some interim milestone dates that are affecting the community, the definition of that specification. I know that work was started months ago and continued as recently as prior to the holidays. Let me get a status on that work since the holidays, and
we'll get more information published on that. We also have the mechanism of our weekly status updates that are posted. We can include that in a future weekly status update. Thank you for
thanks. Looking forward to it.
Next.
And our next question comes from Amadeo April. Please go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Christine. Wait a second, because I have a second mic here. I hope that you still can hear me. I want to go back to the question of similarity. It's not that I want to complain about that, even if I should. I really want to raise a question regarding timeline here. If you publish the confusing similarity results by March 1st, what happens with objections? The current deadline is March 13. One of them is precisely in cases that the panel has decided there is no confusing similarity, so you can file a confusing similarity objection. But there is also the community one, and I can give you at least two examples of cases in which people have doubt whether certain strings will be in the same contention set or not. But if they are not, as some people will not be protected against that string by community priority, they intend to file an objection. But you're giving them 8 working days to do this. It's impossible, Christine. Especially for a community objection, which is a serious thing before the ICC, and that costs, you know, something like $100,000 just to prepare. I hate asking for delays, but there is a conflict here. We were expecting to have this by October. It was ample time to do the to prepare the objections and to decide. But if you keep March 1st, that you might have very good reasons, then we need to seriously discuss from tomorrow about the deadline for objections.
You make a very good point. You make a very good point. Delays in one part, one aspect of the program, have vast implications to other aspects of the program, and I do think that that's something that should be further discussed. Let's take that offline. We can do some analysis from ICANN staff can do some analysis and make some recommendations around the impact to the objection period based on the current initial evaluation schedule.
Please accept some comment on that or post something so we can explain you some concrete examples of things that doesn't work, right? And the other question, I wouldn't like sounding very harsh, Christine, but, you know, I appreciate that you appreciate our disappointment, but I am disappointed that you don't understand the real relation. I'm not your customer. We are your community. We are your stakeholders. We are your employers. You're not selling anything to us. We are ICANN, and you're working for the community. And some of the problems we are seeing is because part of the staff does not understand the real relationship. Okay? Thanks a lot.
Jack, I would, before we go on to the next question, I just want to clarify. ICANN staff has a full appreciation of the implications of these deadlines and the correlation. So to characterize a lack of understanding would be inaccurate and incorrect. We are all working very diligently to meet the milestones and fulfill the expectations of the program. So as I've attempted to express, we fully appreciate the frustration you all have for delays. But I think there would be much greater frustration if we published unsatisfactory results. So I want to assure all of you that staff does have a full appreciation of the correlation. We are not, we are working not to add any further delay to the program. So if the community feels as though the timeline and the impact of the current contention set publication merits other changes to the program schedule, that is something that you have every right to suggest and recommend. But ICANN staff is working to keep the timeline that's been established. Next question.
And our next question comes from Richard Tindall. Please go ahead.
Thanks. My question is about contract negotiation and pre-delegation testing. It seems to me that many of the sub-processes in the evaluation chain have been accelerated to 100 or more applications per week. And in that, I include the route entry rate performed by NTIA and VeriSign and others. But it seems, unless I misunderstood, it seems that the contract negotiation and pre-delegation testing rates are still at 20 per week. Is that correct?
So in the timeline, I have not reflected any changes to the contracting and pre-delegation schedule. I'm aware of what's been communicated about adjustments to the 1,000 per year limit. I can't have further analysis to do on how, what, if any, changes to the program may be made as a result of those comments and what the effective schedule will be. So right now, I'm only prepared to talk about the initial evaluation timeline, but we are most definitely thinking about capacity and bandwidth for both contracting and pre-delegation testing. We don't want our internal process to be a metering or gating factor.
Okay, and thanks for that. And so let me just perhaps leave a couple of thoughts on that, because we have talked about the rate for other sub-processes. So just a couple of points which I think are very pertinent here. The 20 per week rate is not a guidebook requirement. There is nowhere in the guidebook that I'm aware of that turns 1,000 per year into 20 per week. So there's nothing in the guidebook, I believe, that requires a smooth rate of the 20 per week to 1,000 per year. So even if the 1,000 per year doesn't change, what I'm saying is the 20 per week could increase. And my second observation, I think, is perhaps even more significant, and that is that as we look to accelerate sub-processes in this whole thing, the overall rate, of course, is only as fast as the slowest sub-process. So if contract negotiation and pre-delegation testing stay at 20 per week, generally speaking, I don't think we overall get any benefits from accelerating other parts of the process. So we'd really encourage you to have a good look at those two steps of contract negotiation and pre-delegation testing, which are entirely, I think, in ICANN's control. And I would think the only reason that you would be unable to accelerate the rates in those two sub-processes would simply be a resource issue. So we'd really ask you to have a look at those two processes and see, regardless of whether the 1,000 per year is changed or not, if those 20s can be increased to something closer to 100. Thanks.
Richard, thank you very much for the comments. Indeed, I agree. Every process is being evaluated for capacity and throughput. Another question.
Our next question comes from Paul Stahura. Please go ahead.
Thanks. My question goes to the schedule as well. It's obvious that the constant slipping on the schedule is causing all of us great consternation, frustration, and angst. It's one part affects other parts. I understand you know that's true, but sometimes it's subtly true. For example, without confusing similar results, we cannot solve our contention sets amongst ourselves, amongst the applicant community, and therefore, as that gets closer to the initial evaluation date, some of us who drop out might not get the refund, the bigger refund, if you had figured that confusingly similar earlier. So here's my question. It's also about the schedule. You know, I put it in the Q&A part of the webinar. You said early on this call that you guys are on target for the first 30 apps will come out of IE on March 23rd. So by my calculations, you're going to have approximately 100 apps out of IE around the time of the end of the ICANN meeting. You know, at least one of those, you know, assuming at least one will not have any objections, it'll have no GAC advice, and that one applicant is willing to, one out of the 100, is willing to sign the standard registry agreement. And given that, you know, these low draw apps should get through contract negotiation if there is even any, and they should get through pre-delegation testing within a two-week period. In fact, you could start the pre-delegation testing ASAP on those. But anyway, given all that, how soon after the ICANN meeting will ICANN sign it and, B, enter that into the route? I want dates for those.
The last statement you made was you want dates for those?
Yeah, dates. Commit to a date or when you will sign the first application, the first CLD. When is ICANN going to sign it? ICANN's committed to the GAC, but they're not going to sign any contracts until after the ICANN meeting. When after the ICANN meeting are you going to sign the first contract? Because they're going to be pent up, 100 of them, before the ICANN meeting, waiting to be signed. When after the ICANN meeting will you sign it, and how long after that will you enter that one in the route?
So the gating factor is not just the initial evaluation and contracting. As you mentioned, it is the GAC advice. So ICANN has said we will not be executing any registry agreements until the GAC has issued its advice. So I couldn't begin to speculate on the GAC's timeline, but we will be signing contracts as quickly as possible after the GAC advice is issued. We
so
have
you're
no
saying you're gonna wait? What if the GAC never gives advice?
So the GAC is scheduled to issue advice somewhere around the Beijing meeting. So we anticipate that that GAC advice will occur either during or shortly thereafter the Beijing meeting, and then contracts, ICANN would be executing contracts after the Beijing meeting. So that is the timing we're currently working towards, and the meeting is currently scheduled for the 7th through the 11th. So sometime after that is when we will be signing contracts.
I understand that. Assume that the GAC gives you advice by the end of the ICANN meeting, which is April 11th. When will you sign the first contract?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate where you're coming from, but I really can't speculate on hypotheticals.
You mean likely cases?
So your question has made a lot of hypothetical assumptions of every situation along the way and when the GAC advice may be issued. So I think we've been clear that contracts will be signed after Beijing and that there is no intention to delay. I don't have a schedule. I couldn't tell you, based on the hypothetical situation, I couldn't give you a date. Do we have another question in the queue? We have four questions. Next question.
And our next question comes from Brett Fawcett. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Christine. I wanted to follow up. I got in the queue when you were answering John's first question about the string similarity, because honestly, I didn't understand your answer as to why there had been delay. And maybe I thought maybe I could ask a different question, and that is, has ICANN received results yet from Interconnect Communications? Do you have these results on hand?
Oh, we do not. We have not. We have not.
So, I mean, I guess if you had a, if the original dates were in the fall, And certainly there was a delivery date for interconnect communications that was earlier than that. So what's the problem in interconnect, and what have you guys been doing to push them along, because they're blowing deadlines here?
So I think I've addressed this question, Brett, that what we've been doing is we are working with them very closely on the process they're following to ensure that their process, their procedure for evaluating string similarity is agreed upon and understood. So that is an active, we are actively doing that work. Once, I'm confident that once that is complete, that we will be able to move forward with executing on that process and procedure, and we will be able, that the panel firm will be able to provide the results for us.
So it sounds like they've already given you preliminary results and you didn't like them?
What we've been doing with every panel is we've been reviewing the process and their procedure. That is what we evaluate first before we evaluate results. No, we don't ask for results. We don't get results from the panel. We review process.
So at this point, ICANN hasn't received any results from Interconnect.
I think I've answered the questions, but...
Actually, that was just a yes or no question. That was a simple question, and I don't know the answer to it, so I don't think you've answered it already.
I think I've already stated we haven't received results. This isn't a deposition. I don't want it to be confrontational. I'm trying to establish a dialogue here, and I think I've been made a very good faith effort here to answer your questions and John's questions and all of the concerns about string similarity. So we'll move on now to the next question.
And our next question comes from Jeff Newman. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Christine. How are you? I was wondering if I can, I know I'm going back to the contention sets, and I was wondering if I could take a little bit different tact. I think, you know, everyone's talking about the release of the results. I was wondering, with a couple of these items, even if you don't post the results, is there any way you could post the principles at coming up with the results? Because I think that's why a lot of people are getting frustrated, because they don't know how it's going to come out. So that there'd be some presumably easy principles that you could come out with about contention sets. So, for example, you could say that the rule is that if something's a plural of another string, like, you know, something ends with an S, you know, or the equivalent in a foreign language, that is something that the evaluators have deemed to be confusingly similar. Foreign translations of other applications, that could be deemed, and I don't know what the answer is, I'm just giving examples. I mean, if you gave principles like that, I think, you know, people still aren't going to be happy about the date that these things come out, but at least they'll know and they'll be able to make some educated guesses as to whether ICANN is, in fact, going to consider them to be confusingly similar. The same thing could be applied to the types of changes that ICANN is accepting through their change process. So, for example, you could say, yes, if you submit a change request where someone's, you know, substituting a director for another director, that's something, you know, absent any other complications, that's the type of change that ICANN does accept. Or, you know, changing out a registry operator, that may be something that you do or don't accept. Those types of guidance or principles, I think, would be really helpful, even if you can't come out with the actual results. You're starting to do it with the clarifying questions, and I think that's a good start. I know there's only four of them out there. I think the last one was yesterday or 2 days ago. But if you could do that with these other types of things, I think that might help give a little bit of more comfort to the applicants. Not perfect comfort, but at least a little bit more.
So I think, Jeff, you have a request more than a question, which is a request for us to publish advisories around the criteria being used, the criteria about which change requests we'll be accepting or not accepting and the effects thereof. I think that's reasonable. We're in the analysis stage of on change requests. If your business models have changed, if you have changed your organization, if you have changed your officers, if you have applicants are changing their model of doing business, it's a change. What we need to do is determine how we're going to handle that change and what the impact will be to schedule, to evaluation, reevaluation, et cetera. So that is what we're discussing internally, and I think that's totally reasonable. The request I'm hearing is a request for clarity around our process for change requests.
Well, that's one of them. It's a change request. But also
request. I'll go to. But is that the request on change request to begin with?
Yes. Under what circumstances? What are the types of changes that we think that you think are the types that you would accept versus not accept? And I know you gave a general answer here about changing business model, but you know, people, for example, throw out something about changing a back-end registry operator, right? Is that a type of change request you would even entertain? Is that material?
So in terms of the impact and on the evaluation and processing of an application based on changes, yes, so that is something we are actively working on and something we can look to publish an advisory on in the coming week. I can't commit to a date on that at this moment.
Okay.
So back to the string similarity. The challenge, very honestly, is that what we're doing is we're comparing 1,400 strings against one another. So it's this factorial type of problem in terms of analyzing confusing similarity. And if we could come up with that set of rules about what is confusing or not, that would have been an easy way to go. But that is not, what we're finding is there is no one clear set of rules that leads us to identify confusing similarity or not. So it is a very complex problem, and that is why we are focusing on this process of evaluation. So if we do and we are able to come up with rules and guidance, we would certainly publish that. But frankly, we will, by the time we had clarity around that, we would have the results. So it's... I get those questions all the time. I can't tell you whether, you know, one string is similar to another. I don't have a set of rules. I don't have some cheat sheet in my back pocket that I can apply, and neither does our firm. And there are many dimensions to confusingly similar. So we are actively working on the procedure for making that determination. So it is a procedure more than a set of rules.
Not even for things like factors that go into making the decision. I think the issue is that people are trying to plan, but they don't necessarily know. Even as simple as is a plural added to the end of a word, so hotel and hotels, and I'm sure there's a ton of other examples. Is that confusingly similar? I mean, that would seem like something like that would be there has to be some general rule, or the factors that the interconnect is taking into consideration.
I completely understand the question. I don't believe that we'll be publishing an advisory on that. If at some point we determine that there are a set of rules or guidelines that could be published, we certainly would. But that is not the approach being used today.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks.
And our next question comes from Charles Gomez. Please go ahead.
Great.
Thank you. Today, I believe, is the date when staff had committed to respond to the board regarding how enforcement will be made for commitments made in applications and how those will be added to the contract. Obviously, all of us are needing to know what that final base contract is going to look like. Can you? Is that in fact going to happen today, or do you have any idea when that response to the GAC is going to happen?
You know, that's slightly beyond my purview. I believe that there will be some response forthcoming. I don't know if that's happening today. That's not something that I'm privy to.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. And I think we've got one last call on the phone.
Yeah, our next question comes from Yasmin Omer. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Yes, hi, Christine. Just a couple of questions regarding contract negotiations. Well, probably a request, similar to what Jeff Newman mentioned regarding the advisories. I've got quite a few questions regarding contract negotiations, so specifically what the standard form of the contract will look like and what exactly constitutes a contract negotiation, and how the exemption of the code of conduct ties in with this, and what exactly the process will be for contract negotiation. So we do have quite a few questions here, and I'm thinking perhaps the publication of an advisory might be best to answer those questions. Also, with pre-delegation testing, how do registries nominate to participate in the pre-delegation testing pilot? Thanks.
So the contracting process is something that we are actively, we've been working on process design for some time now. As that is finalized internally, I'm sure that we will determine something that we can share with the applicant community about what that will look like, what the machinations for the contracting process will be, and how we will be able to interact. I don't have that for you today, but the process overall, the tools, the resources, that's all something we are actively working on. That was number one. The last question, could you repeat, Yasmin?
Sorry, that was, how do we participate in the pre-delegation testing pilot program?
So I apologize if I led to some confusion. Pre-delegation testing pilot, I'm not aware of a pre-delegation testing pilot. We are working, what I reported as status was intended to reflect our work with a vendor to set up the pre-delegation testing environment and be prepared for pre-delegation testing as soon as we had initial evaluation results and we had applicants ready for pre-delegation testing. So at this
that
point,
was actually
pilot scheduled. Perhaps it's something we should consider, but right now, you know, once we begin pre-delegation testing, we will begin again based on the priority order and the having achieved all of the previous milestones for the
application. It was actually, sorry, Christine, it was actually mentioned in the pre-del testing RFP that there would be a pilot program. So my question relates to how we go about participating in that. Is it through ICANN, or do we contact the provider directly?
You know what? Good question. I was unaware of piloting of pre-delegation testing. Let me follow up, and we can include an update in our weekly status next week.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. I want to thank everyone who has participated and submitted questions via phone. I understand these are difficult conversations to have, that the overall schedule is a point of frustration. We are working diligently. The team is working very hard to meet the expectations and the milestones of the program. So I will turn to my team here and ask if we have any questions that were submitted via the pod that were not already answered. So if you've already addressed it via something on the phone, That's great. Is there anything else?
Yes, there's some new questions that are in the pod. Shall I go ahead and start with the first one? This one is from Roger Castillo. Extended evaluation. In case an extended evaluation is required, would it start immediately after the results are announced? And would you please give an estimate of duration?
We don't have a specific schedule announced for extended evaluation. It really depends which areas require extended evaluation. That likely the schedule will depend on the type of extended evaluation being opted for. Communicating that schedule and defining that schedule will be something that we will do before initial evaluation results are published.
Thank you, Christine. Next question is just an ask for a clarification from Steve Crocker. On slide number 7, what does MTD mean?
Month to date. I apologize, month to date. Thank you.
Next question from Roger Castillo again. On pre-delegation testing, Roger says, I understand that pre-delegation testing is to demonstrate that the registry backend has the capacity to provide registry services according to the guidebook and registry agreements. From this understanding, I assume that the pre-delegation test can be completed even if the final SRS and other registry systems for a specific TOD are still under development. But the backend provider is capable to complete the pre-delegation testing on its current infrastructure. Is that correct? Are you planning on publishing some guidelines or standard procedures and reports for the pre-delegation testing?
So you're asking a detailed question about the specifics of the pre-delegation testing, the prerequisites, and expectations. We will certainly issue an advisory about the expectations that will be required and achieved by the applicant prior to commencement of pre-delegation testing or for successful execution of pre-delegation testing. I don't have those details at hand, but that's an advisory we could certainly publish before initial evaluation results are published.
Thank you, Christine. Next question is from Kieran McCarthy. Are the approved changes to applications posted in one place, and if so, what's the URL? Yeah, I can go ahead and answer that one, Kieran. Yes, it is posted on the microsite. If you go to the applications or program update tab on the microsite and then click on current application status, one of the columns on that page is applications update. If you filter that column for yes, any applications that show yes in that column means that a change request has been approved and that change is posted for comment. And follow-up question on the same topic of change requests from Bruce Tongting. Have you rejected any change requests?
We have not rejected any change requests at this point.
Thank you. This is a clarification question from the Association Punta GAL. Does the timetable mean that applications that received 101 position in the draw will get the CQs in the two weeks after January 15th?
So this is a rough timeline. So as application 101, you're right at the cusp. You could receive your clarifying questions the week of January 15th, or you could receive them the week of January 22nd. If we have more than 100 ready to go, we will certainly release CQs on more than 100, but that is a rough gauge. And if we find that we are expediting that schedule or lagging, we will certainly communicate any revisions to that general 100 per week schedule.
Thank you, Christine. Next question from Henriette. With regards to CQs, will ICANN be releasing any further advisories before the 15th?
Today's the 11th. At this point, I don't know that we're going to have any more advisories between now and the 15th. But if there are, we'll certainly include that. We'll post it, and then we'd include that in our weekly status update.
Thank you. Next question from Robin Ettrix. When will we receive final decisions about the strawman and LPR proposals?
So I believe the strawman is referring to the TMCH strawman proposal, and that public comment period is still open until next week, I think about the 15th. It's sometime after that as we move forward and execute the standard public comment evaluation process.
Thank you. Next question from Jenny Nath. Vigor, can you clarify the TMCH date? February for people to start entering March, and what does April database mean? Would it run for 90 days from the February launch?
So there is a front-end registration system that our service provider, Deloitte, is launching, so they will be able to begin accepting trademark registrations as early as February. And the database milestones refer to the ICANN centralized TMC database, which is under a separate statement of work. And we engaged IBM to provide that centralized TMCH database for us. We are still working on the Sunrise and Claims SOW with IBM, so that we will be able to offer the Sunrise and Claims functionality through that centralized database. We had some other questions about that earlier. I hope that helps on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question from Bruce Tonkin. Has any consideration been given to some appeal processes on contention sets? Could be that some applicant may be able to develop agreements on how they use names to avoid consumer confusion.
So, as far as I'm aware, there is no appeals process. That was the subject of lengthy debate, I presume, prior to program launch. But that right now there is not an appeals process for contention sets.
I'm not seeing any new questions in the chat pod,
okay.
Or in the Q&A pod.
Okay. And do we have any one? We have no one else on the phone. So 1:30, 90 minutes, perfect timing all. Thank you. I appreciate all of your questions, your participation in the webinar. We have a number of action items we will follow up on, and we will continue to provide updates in our weekly updates. Thank you to all who participated. I appreciate it. Have a great evening and a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call. AT&T would like to thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.